You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast with me, Alistair Reid. Every year, newspaper circulations decrease. Apart from the occasional exception, the overwhelming trend is undeniable. A 2013 study citing figures from the Audit Bureau of Circulation argues that, for paid regional titles in the UK, circulation is less than half what it was at the turn of the century. This is obviously bad for business, but it has an editorial effect as well, as Sarah Hartley, editor and co-founder of Contributoria, the crowdfunding platform for collaborative journalism, and managing director of community publishing organisation Talk About Local, explains.
What we're seeing is that life goes on, news goes on, but obviously the big newspaper groups have somewhat retracted from their areas in some places. And this has left a gap that's naturally been filled. I think in these particular areas, I've spotted this need for some more in-depth sort of coverage.
In the Northeast, journalist and lecturer Ian Wiley has concerns over how local media organisations may not be able to cover all that the readers want to hear.
I think, like a lot of regions, we just feel that sometimes they don't go far enough. That you know, these local and regional media are very good at doing the information exchange bit. You know, so they tell us, you know, about who's been in court that day and those little sort of snippets of news, but don't often get the chance to connect the dots and look at bigger themes and go into any greater depth.
His solution has been to crowdfund a local magazine, The Northern Correspondent, for long-form local journalism, initially in print but expanding on the web and with multimedia, and engaging readers in the editorial process.
You know, so there's an issue that that someone has come to me with regarding, you know, in the social care field. And, you know, it's just something that I know if he had come to me with that story and I was sat at daily newspaper, I'd be thinking, blimey, I'm not sure I can do that, because there's a lot of work in that, and it's very complex. And to tell the story, I would have to go off diary for a week just to do the research. So I'm not going to do, you know, I wouldn't be able to touch it. Whereas it's an issue that I'm thinking, actually, yes, you know, we can do some digging around here with the collaboration that we've. Networks that we're setting up, we can probably get other people to report their experiences and to us. And then we can build something from there. We can connect the dots that I just don't think, you know, a local or regional newspaper or a broadcaster is going to have the time and the resource and the inclination to do.
The first issue has already been successfully funded, including in-depth stories covering the tragic death of a local filmmaker, allegations of cruelty in pigeon racing, and the demise in joyriding culture in the area. The level of support to hear these tales told took the Northern Correspondent well into its stretch goals for funding on Kickstarter, with 30 backers choosing the pledge to join the editorial team in planning the second issue. This element has been key, said Ian.
And, you know, what I've found is that it's not just about raising the money. What it's been really good at doing, well, two things. It's kind of validated the idea because, you know, up until we actually launched the Kickstarter, then it was, well, you know, we think this is a good idea, but we're only a group of, you know, half a dozen people. You know, what does the rest of the world think about it? So it's kind of given us that validation. But the second thing is, you know, it means that it's put us directly in contact with people who like the idea, but also we want to contribute, you know. So I think there's a fair number of the backers that we've got are writers, are photographers, are illustrators, and that excites me a bit, because it goes then from being just an editorial team of, you know, of six people to, you know, I don't know. I would far rather have 50 people with ideas, some of them great ideas, some of them random. I'd far rather be in that position than us, you know, scratching around thinking, okay, well, what are we going to do again for the next issue? And I think that kind of ties in with the whole spirit of collaborative, you know, online journalism.
At the other end of the country, a group of activists, journalists and academics have crowdfunded the Bristol Cable, a citizen media cooperative also hoping to give local stories a home online, unifying interested parties in the Bristol area. Co-founder Adam Cantwell-Corn explains.
You know, as we all know, we've seen the sort of the emergence of new forms of media particularly citizen media, citizen journalism in the past few years, and the sort of the power and the potency that that has had. And our aim is to bring some coherence and organizational form to something which could be a bit disparate, could be a bit disorganized, and make it a bit something of a bit more substance. So instead of your odd blog here or your odd tweet here, we want to like to really bring people in to become real citizen journalists where they're actually conducting long-term investigations, they're gaining skills. We're going to be having the workshop program, which is a real source of pride for us because we're making this a genuinely participatory and outreach-led organization, which is trying to bring people in to gain the skills so they can actually create citizen journalism, which is of a high standard and which a lot of people, a broad range of people, can connect to.
Citizen journalists around Bristol will be invited to workshops and trained in various journalism skills to take advantage of the new format digital media presents, says co-founder Alon Avaram.
So we're looking at like mapping technology or trying to have interactive infographics, say that map on you, in this case Bristol, different trends. So for example, we're going to source information which is readily available, say, about income disparity or economic inequality in the city, and then build up a picture of the city in terms of that. Say, we'll map onto that in a very visualized, color-coded, interactive way, the spread of betting shops in the area or pawnbrokers or, cash for gold exchanges and so on. And in this way, we can really hit a lot of pertinent issues to a lot of people and do it in a way which is sort of engaging and accessible to a lot of people and like also serves as a communal resource too.
And the Bristol Cable intends to involve a community share scheme to give readers and backers a stake in the organisation.
We're really kind of counting on the community share scheme, which is, definitely a financial model we want to develop. And we think that not only would it be beneficial for us financially, but it's also, really key in democratizing media in the city. But in order to make a community share scheme viable, what we really need to do is build the confidence within, a fairly large section of local society and for people to really consider the Bristol Cable to be a public asset. If people consider the Bristol Cable to be a public asset, and they recognise that this is a local media source which they value, then obviously the community share scheme is going to be far more viable.
Although the open nature of the Bristol Cable is key to enfranchising citizen journalists and readers in the common cause of telling untold stories, that doesn't mean it will be a free-for-all, says Adam.
As a cooperative, we're going to be, as inclusively and democratically organised as possible. Now, we're not going to be an open source publication. We're going to have an editorial policy, we're going to have a members charter and everything else. And so in that sense, there is a direction and a theme of this publication. But at the same time, with that, as a cooperative comes, maybe there's going to be differences of opinion. And there's going to be, if everybody has, institutionally, structurally, an equal voice, how do we overcome potentially head-on challenges or differences of opinion? And the way which we're going to address that is that we're going to allow for, within the confines of the editorial policy and the members' constitution, a large degree of flexibility where people can put forward different views. We're not going to have a strict editorial line. We're going to have a policy and themes, but that doesn't mean we're going to be mixing, different styles or opinions as long as they inform the commonly agreed editorial policy.
With Sarah's experience in Contributoria, she recognises the challenges that such a heavy involvement between reader and journalist can bring.
How much weight have I brought with my pounds and pence? Does the fact that I've put into the funding mean that my voice has to be heard, or am I happy for my funding to be taken by somebody who's, professionally trained and happy for them to go ahead and produce what they want? It does change the dynamic. It's something that I know Ian will be looking at very carefully because there's a balance to strike there. And it's a similar situation with Contributoria. Obviously, the writers there, they can collaborate together, but at the end of it, who's, you know, how is it weighted? Which person gets the final kind of say-so? And those are all issues which they'll, you know, the sites will deal with, I'm sure, as they come along. They can be quite challenging and demanding, and they're sort of formulating the framework, if you like, for a new type of relationship with journalism, I think.
For Adam, this is the point, though. Disillusioned with the traditional local media in his area, he wants to engage the readership in the process to better highlight issues that he feels aren't being covered. As Ian pointed out, these types of stories might not be the usual output of a local paper, but rather projects like the Bristol Cable and the Northern Correspondent are supplemental to what traditional organisations provide. That difference is key to Adam.
We're definitely not trying to replicate the organisational or ownership forms of local media, and very important, we're not trying to replicate the content either. Like, we don't have the capacity or neither necessarily the desire to have daily rolling coverage of the news that, in our case, the Bristol Post is producing. What we're trying to do is give things a context, give things a theme, have news and analysis and comment and, you know, debate, and create kind of a holistic publication, which, you know, might, for intents and purposes, might look a bit more like a magazine than a newspaper. And we're going to be encouraging people to tease out what, you know, what does it mean for local journalism as opposed to just the sort of the turnover of local news, and like how we can, you know, get the hundreds of people that we've already talked to that have shown, you know, demonstrable support. How can we get them actively engaged in journalism and therefore in their, you know, own lives and in their communities and in society in the wider sense?
For national or international news outlets with large social media teams, innovative platforms for engaging with the audience and a readership of millions, conversation with the audience is less of a daunting task. But by opening the doors more fully on a local level, Ian suggests crowdfunding and collaboration may be a successful model for long-form journalism.
In our new age of collaborative journalism, you kind of lose control, a little bit of control in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, or you have to be willing to give up some control. It can't be any longer us telling you what we think you should read. You know, we have to listen as well to what people, and I think that is one of the challenges of Kickstarter. You're kind of inviting people to get involved in your project, to back you. So they're kind of like, even though it's £5 here, £10 there, they're like little mini investors who have a say in the project. And so you have to listen to them, and therefore that you do have to be willing to be guided by them. But you know, I think that's exciting, because, you know, I think that's far better, as I say, than half a dozen of us sitting, you know, trying to dream up, you know, ideas that we think other people will want to read.
And this kind of experimentation is key to the future of local media, says Sarah.
The previous models pretty much busted. It's a time really for trying out new ideas and new models, and it may be that some try and fail. It depends perhaps on the, you know, how vigorous the local community is, how impassioned about certain issues they are. In the end, that will be what the defining moment, I suppose. But yeah, I think this is definitely a good way to look at how our news is funded and who is responsible for producing it.
You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.